Dale Brown, a time for Patriots, taking your calls coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Lots of people want to get through to Dale Brown, a time for Patriots. It's his latest novel. We'll start with David in Avon, New York, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. David?
Good morning, Ian.
Morning. You're talking with Dale Brown. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning.
I just wanted to bring up this draft thing that he's talking about. You know, when this war started, we had an administration that sent our National Guard out of the country and breaking the 1902 Act, called the Dick Act of 1902. It's H.R. or House Resolution H.R. 11654, where no executive can send our National Guard out of the country. So we're talking about men who joined the National Guard to protect our country, and yet they were sent out, which is worse than the draft. This is just like taking them away from the job that they're supposed to do to protect us. And now we got private security agencies that are taking over that. And somebody should be ashamed of themselves for not protecting us.
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100%. I think that all the National Guard troops right now should be sent home and reassigned to, you know, duties inside the United States. They should not be sent overseas at all. And I think the whole total force concept, where they wanted to augment the regular forces with National Guard and reservists, was a complete mistake. I think that I used to recommend the National Guard to a lot of folks, a lot of kids who were graduating from high school, who didn't quite know what they wanted to do. And I used to recommend the National Guard to a lot of kids, but I think once they started with a total force concept, and they were sending the National Guard troops overseas for 6 month, 12 month, even 18 month tours, absolutely wrong. And I agree with you 100%.
Let's get Ron in New York City, first time caller line for Dale Brown, a time for Patriots. Ron.
Hey, Ian.
Hey.
On the heels of the last call, my question is that these wars that we have fought recently in the 20th century, starting with World War One, that was a planned war. Also, World War Two, plausible on that. You know, we all know about the Iraq War and the motives of Mr. Bush to enter Iraq. But why are we double talking? Why are we double talking when we know that these wars are illegitimate, and yet we're still talking about people, you know, volunteering, or you know, these wars are unjust, and it's not really conducive to the human race in general, because you go over in Iraq, we kill civilians, innocent civilians, and then, you know, and it's just too much ambiguity in the stories of the federal government to back up these wars. You know, there's a lot of people add up.
Let's give Dale Brown a chance to respond to that, Ron. Go ahead, Dale.
Well, I disagree that we're over there to kill civilians. We're not over there to kill civilians. I think that a lot of that is propaganda by the local governments to portray. I mean, that the Americans are over there in their country, and it's natural for them to say that we're invaders, we're killing civilians. Our goal, the U.S. military's goal, is not to kill civilians over there; it's to kill the bad guys. But the fact is that we're invaders in their country, and that's going to be the problem. Anytime you go into a different country's space, you're going to be branded as an invader, and you're going to be branded as a killer. And that's the role that you're going to have to accept. If you take on a counterinsurgency type role, you're going to have to to understand that the civilian population is going to call you an invader, no matter what your goal is. If you're there to help the population, if you're there to help the government, it doesn't matter because you're going to be branded an invader because you're a foreigner.
But we are invaders. I mean, we are invaders. I mean, so we can say we're branded invaders. We're just invaders. I mean, and I'm not saying, so let's just skip past the branded part. As for the civilian deaths in Iraq, and we are talking about twice as many casualties confirmed. Twice as many civilians have died in the Iraq War than all U.S. deaths during the Vietnam War. I mean, like 110,000 civilians have died during the Iraq War. So, I mean, it's not like it's just a perception or it's propaganda. As far as I know, that's a confirmed number. Some of the bigger estimates are in the area of 200 or 300.
And I would say exactly who caused those civilian deaths. Are they at the hands of the U.S. military?
I didn't say we did it. I said those are confirmed deaths during the Iraq War, 110,000.
That's an important distinction. I mean, who caused those deaths? If it's at the hands of the U.S. military, that's one thing. If it's at the hands of Al-Qaeda or if it's Al-Siders group, exactly who caused those deaths? And that's an important distinction, and I think that's the problem. If you're an invading force, no matter what your goals are, if the United States wants to go in there to establish order or establish peace or democracy, whatever else, exactly, it doesn't matter what the United States wants. It's what the people of the country want, and you can argue whether or not the United States is successful at it or not successful, but it's a propaganda war that you have to fight that determines whether or not you're successful at that conflict or not.
All right. Let's go Robin in Alaska for Dale Brown, A Time for Patriots is his new novel. Robin?
Hi, how you doing?
Hi.
Hi, Robin.
I want to preface this by saying ex-Air Force enlisted from about the same time period as he is, and my husband is 100% service-connected disabled vet. He was a Ranger warrant officer, and he joined in 72, so he was not drafted but in under the draft. And I was in New York on 9/11. And I think, I think you're right. We need to bring everybody into a war if we're going to fight a war. Bush told us to go shopping on 9/12, and if he had said enlist, there would have been lines around the recruiters in New York.
I absolutely agree, Robin.
And we need to get rid of Blackwater, whatever they're calling themselves, Triple Canopy. We have as many contractors, professional mercenaries fighting with us as we do men in uniform and women in uniform. And we need to get rid of them and bring it all under the umbrella of the uniformed services. And I have one real quick thing to say. Senator Mark Begich, Nick Begich's brother, invited the VA Secretary Shinseki to Alaska here. And even though we have the highest percentage of veterans of any state, we have the worst VA medical care of any state. And Shinseki is going to be taking at the Luzak Library Tuesday in Anchorage, he's going to be holding a meeting, and I would like any veteran possible to show up and try to get us better medical care than what we have here in Alaska.
Well, I'm sorry you're not getting – you deserve the best, so thank you. And Dale Brown, a chance to respond to what Robin said?
Well, Robin, I disagree with one aspect of it. I spent a lot of time with a lot of military contractors writing two novels about military contractors, and I think those guys are very dedicated, very loyal troops. A lot of them are military veterans. They're very experienced guys, and I think they believe in the United States. They're not out there for a profit.
Well, come on. I mean, they obviously aren't there for a profit to a point. I mean, they're getting, I mean, that's why we know, I mean, I know people who did regular service. They came back, they couldn't find a job here, and they went back for the paycheck and because they also enjoyed the adventure of it. I mean, that's not a myth.
But it's not a bad thing either. It all depends on what your motivation is. If you're there for the paycheck, if you're just there for the paycheck, you're not going to have a good time over there in Iraq or Afghanistan or driving through Pakistan. You're not going to have a good time doing it.
Well, I'm not saying it's not about whether they should have a good time in the middle of the war, Dale. All I'm saying is that. If we're going to hold the criteria up that people shouldn't be doing that for a paycheck and that you didn't want people to be drafted who didn't want to be there otherwise, there's lots of people who are serving who can't find work here, and they go there because the pay's better to be working for one of the private contractors than, you know, to be in the regular service. And yeah. And they find pretty good work.
My experience even, Ian, that those people might think that they could make a lot of money if they join up with this particular organization and they go overseas to Pakistan or to Afghanistan or to Israel, whatever, but their perceptions change very quickly once they get on the ground. And if they stick with it, then it's not because of the money. It's because they have a job that needs to be done. And I truly believe that those people, even military contract, they get such a bad rap nowadays, but they're doing a job that needs to be done for the U.S. State Department, for the Foreign Service, for the U.S. military. They're doing a job, but if they weren't getting something from it other than the money, they wouldn't be there. And that's what I truly believe. And it's not about the money. It's not about their different economic status. They're there because they're doing a job that they believe in. It's not just because of the money.
Karen is in Colorado on the Coast to Coast for Dale Brown, A Time for Patriots. This is his latest novel. Karen?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. First, excuse my head cold. I have a question and a premise, and I'll take my answer off the air afterwards. In your book, which I haven't had a chance to get hold of yet, the Civil Air Patrol, which I was a member of as a cadet years and years ago, does it take a defensive or an offensive role in your novel? And secondly, a premise that has nothing to do with our current administration, but what if we had a president who was bent on retaining power after losing an election, who developed a black ops force that could take over, say, a Titan II missile silo, detonate a nuclear weapon in the ground, declare martial law, and have FEMA, which at one time had the right to suspend the Constitution, do so, and then under presidential order, suspend the House and the Senate, and also suspend the Posse Comitatus Act, which would effectively create a dictatorship.
Okay.
Might allow Texas to secede from the Union and return to a republic with its 1840 to 1850 borders.
Well, let's get an answer. Get an answer to those. Thank you, Karen. Dale?
Absolutely. Very cool idea, Karen. I'm going to answer your second one first. Absolutely incredible idea, and that's the kind of out of the box thinking that I really enjoy. When I design these books, when I write these outlines, I have to pitch every idea that I have. You would think after 25 years of doing this that I wouldn't have to pitch ideas, but each and every idea for a novel, I have to pitch it to the publisher and I have to sell it to them. And that's the kind of idea. That's the kind of out of the box. I mean, completely freaking out of mind experience that the publishers want to hear from. And if you have that book in you, I encourage everybody to, I mean, everybody listening out there, I encourage you, I'll help you to write those books, because that's an absolutely great idea. I mean, everybody, when you first hear that idea, you're shocked at it. You're mesmerized by it. You're frozen by it. And you hear it and you say, well, that's not possible. And then you think about it. You think about it a little bit more, and you think about it in the context of the current political situation, and you say, well, you know, that might be possible. That, you know, that could actually happen. That's where the genesis of an idea comes from, and that's an absolutely great idea for a book. And I really hope that you write it down. And I mean, even if you're not ready to write a novel from it, at least write an outline from it. Write down a bunch of ideas. Write down a bunch of scenes. You need about 10 chapters. Each chapter has maybe two or three scenes in it. So you need about 20 to 30 scenes in there. We need to build a novel from it. That's what publishers want. That's what editors are begging for nowadays. Anybody can do this. I don't have any training in fiction. I wasn't an English major. I don't have any training in writing a novel, but it's ideas like that you just came up with that will sell, that people will pay big bucks to hear that. And that's exciting for me to hear. And I probably won't latch onto it, but if you can write 400, 500, 600 pages of that, there are publishers and there are editors that are begging for stuff like that. And you should do that. That's an absolutely great idea, and I hope you follow through with it.
That was kind of a popular thought for a while. I remember toward the tail end of the Bush administration, we'd gotten a lot of calls like that. Some people that were sort of openly suggesting that President Bush was going to create a kind of false flag operation. A lot of that feeling kind of left over from some people about 9/11, and that he was going to stay in power. And then almost immediately that transitioned into President Obama. A lot of people thought, well, this now he's the one who's going to do it. And so, yeah, I think it would be a hard thing for any president to pull off. But, you know, that whole FEMA thing really scared a lot of people. We've got many people hanging on who want to ask questions of Dale Brown. And the new novel is called A Time for Patriots. And then also, too, just real quickly, the first question that Karen asked was about whether the Civil Air Patrol is used offensively or defensively in your novel. And I almost don't want to give away the answer. Is that all right if we don't give away the answer one way or another and make her go read it?
Give it away. I think people should read the book and make a decision for themselves whether or not it's an offensive force or a defensive force.
Right. We'll just say that there's a lot of dotted lines in A Time for Patriots. The new novel, and we'll give you the numbers. We'll try and clear out a line for you to be able to hook up with Dale Brown coming up next. Otherwise, this would be the perfect book for you to grab and read, maybe sitting on a lazy chair somewhere on Monday when you get a Memorial Day off. Sit back and enjoy this one with a cold drink and a pool if you can. And we'll get back to Dale Brown coming up next on Coast to Coast. The Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial kickoff for summer, although my summer won't start until I can see Steven Spielberg's Super 8 and Cowboys versus Aliens. It'd be massively cool. But I have read my first summer novel that's A Time for Patriots. Dale Brown takes your questions. Remember to do something to make Memorial Day weekend memorable, especially on Memorial Day itself. Your calls, your comments next. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Ponet. Well, Matt in Michigan's been hanging on the longest, so we'll start with him. Calls and comments for Dale Brown, A Time for Patriots. Matt?
And Dale, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
All right.
Just wanted to start off and say about 5 years of listening, my first time through, so it's kind of exciting. I'm a veteran. I served 10th Mountain Division, and after that I went to Korea, and then I served with a government organization called the NGIC, which is the National Ground Intelligence Center. When I was in 10th Mountain, I went to both Somalia and Haiti, and I just wanted to make a few comments and let you guys have at them as you will. A comment was made about, you know, whenever we go into a country, we're seen as invaders. I take issue with that because I know when I got off the helicopter in Haiti, we were going in, and literally the night before when Cedros made the decision to step down, our mission turned from invasion to occupation. And I remember being in a field with a infantry company, my engineer squad. I was a combat engineer. My engineer squad was with them, and we went to the gate in the morning because we had a mission that we had to run. And we heard what sounded like 1,000 people outside. And we sent the scouts up and looked down, and there was a small street. There was about 300-400 people out there, and they were holding signs saying, "Welcome U.S., thank you U.S. And they were literally, I mean, when we walked out of the gates, little children were running up to us and touching us so they could tell their friends that they touched an American. So I definitely take issue with that they always see. I think what happens is...
Wait. I think you're taking issue with something that didn't get said, just so you know. I mean, I understand your point, and I'm glad that happened for you, but there are times when we're invited. There's times when we come in a role that's agreed upon in advance, and then there's other times when the general population might feel like we're invading. And I think that we just have to kind of be good with that's how some people will perceive us. And I don't know what the issue is with that. I mean, but I'm glad it didn't happen to you, and I'm glad that you were honored by people wanting to touch you and think that's cool. But I think you misheard something here, that if you think I said any, or either of us said, anytime we show up somewhere, we're invaders.
Well, my point is that I was going to bring up in follow-up to that is I'm sure we do start off that way, but a lot of times what starts off in one vein turns into a resentment by the local populace, because the United States has this fantastic way of changing mission. We go into a country for quote-unquote humanitarian purposes. And then when 10th Mountain was in Haiti, it was, we were, you know, everybody loved us. When we left, we were replaced by another division who took a much more negative outlook towards the local populace. And within a month, the local populace resented the United States being there. So I think a lot of it has to do with the way that we approach whatever country we're in.
I think I'm sure you're right. We got a lot of people that want to get through, though. So did you have a question or a comment specifically for Dale to respond to?
Sure. Two real quick. I'll take the response off.
Look, give me your best one up front, because we've already had a couple here. So there's a lot of people that want to get through. So go ahead and give me one.
Okay. There's a lot of disagreement between the two of you versus draft and volunteer. I'm going to throw another word into the mix that is used in Israel, called compulsory. Now, I think the issue that you're dealing with is as much as it has to do with training. Because in Vietnam, what was happening is you had people being used as grist in the mill. And in the Gulf War and other conflicts involving the all-volunteer army, you had people that had been training for literally years.
Right.
In Israel, they have a compulsory army where when you're 18, you give hell or high water, you're going into the military.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, but
that's why I used the term. I used the term compulsory service earlier. You may not have caught that. Go ahead, Dale. You respond to that.
Yeah. My only response to that is that you have to go on the ground in Israel to realize exactly what the situation is there. And when they say compulsory versus draft versus volunteer, you have to realize exactly what the situation is when you're talking about the scale of distance, how close you are to your potential enemies, and exactly what the recent history for Israel is. It's completely different than the United States. When you talk about you know, volunteerism, and you talk about compulsory, you talk about the draft, you talk about volunteerism in the United States is completely different in Israel. When you can be on the top floor of a hotel and you can look out to the east and you can see your enemy standing there, that's a completely different situation. And when you talk about compulsory and volunteerism, there's no comparison to the United States. So I think that's exactly two different things that we're talking about. But I like your observations with that you have to take the situations differently, and you have to realize exactly what situations you're talking about.
Let's get Jack from Michigan on Coast to Coast. And Jack, I just ask you to make your best point up front, because there's a lot of people that want to get through.
Oh, that's going to be tough, but I'll try.
Now, go for it, Jack.
Okay.
Don't make me make you.
All right, well, there's my emphasis right there. All right, Ian.
Okay.
So, forward, man.
It's Memorial Holiday, right?
So, Memorial Day weekend.
In honor of two fallen heroes, one in Tucson, Arizona, whose name I can't recall, but was murdered in cold blood by a militarized county sheriff's SWAT team, shot 60-some times, and was allowed to bleed to death while paramedics were standing by the way. And then, of course, Pat Tillman, also of Arizona, from the professional football team,
yep,
discovered that he and his buddies over in Afghanistan were being deployed to recultivate the opium poppy fields under the direction of the Central Insurrection Agency, and to this very day continue to do so. And that's been corroborated by Jack McLam, who's a veteran of Vietnam, Bo Greitz. I don't know if this man has ever heard of Bo Greitz, the most highly decorated Green Beret. I've got his book in my hand right now, Called to Serve, Profiles in Conspiracy from John F. Kennedy to George Herbert Walker Bush. I'm going to read one little quick section.
Got to be really quick, because I really want to give...
CIA in releasing mafia leaders such as Genovese and Luciano in exchange for their cooperation in the invasion of Sicily helped set the stage for the flood, while covert CIA support of the Corsican gangsters in gaining control of the docks in southern France led in short order to ports such as Marseille becoming major centers of heroin refining and exporting. Well, what Greitz goes on to prove is that the Vietnam War, and this has been corroborated by Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin, who authored the book Expendable Elite, that the CIA, State Department, etc., are up to their eyeballs in this covert skullduggery of having foreign leaders murdered and then installing CIA puppets to go about the business of drug trade.
Well, let's let Dale have a chance to respond in here, because otherwise we're just going to run out of time. Dale?
Yeah, there should be no doubt whatsoever that the first casualty of a war is the truth, that everybody's going to spin the actual events of a war in their direction. And I'm not saying that what you just said was false or if it's true or not, but the first casualty of war is the truth,
right?
I mean, what the CIA does, I do a lot of research on the CIA and the State Department and the Pentagon, and I'm amazed every time I start poking around and I start making phone calls and I start getting information from my sources in various parts of Washington. I'm amazed every time I pick up the phone and find out what these guys are talking about. And I don't believe it at first, but then when I start poking around a little bit more and some of the stuff starts getting corroborated, that I'm amazed about what's going on. So
do you think it's possible that Pat Tillman from the formerly of the Arizona Cardinals, that he was in fact an intentional victim of friendly fire?
No, not intentional, but I think he was a victim of friendly fire.
Yeah, there's no dispute about it.
To what they initially said.
Right, right. Happened. No. Actually, the claim is that it was an intentional act. But you don't believe the intentional part.
No, I don't believe the intentional part. But I do believe some people claim it was friendly fire, and
there's no dispute about it being friendly fire. It's all friendly. Absolutely. It's completely verified it's friendly fire. The only question at this point is whether or not it was intentional.
Yeah.
Jacob is west of the Rockies in Everett, Washington, on Coast to Coast for Dale Brown, A Time for Patriots. Jacob?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Jacob. How you doing?
I'm good. So I was actually a former Marine. I actually got out about less than a year ago. And I heard you talking about the communications in the Civil Air Union or Civil Air Force. And I was actually in a field radio operator and operated out of Afghanistan and did work over there. And I was really interested to hear about the communications deal. And I was wondering if there's like any branches up here in Everett or up here in Washington that I can get into and to kind of sort of make a difference up here.
Yes, absolutely. Civil Air Patrol relies quite a bit. Everybody talks about the air patrols and the air crews and the mission pilots and mission observers, but the mainstay of the Civil Air Patrol is the incident command system. That's the first thing you learn about when you join Civil Air Patrol, is that you go through all the emergency services and the incident command system. And the most important people in the entire system are the incident command post. The people who man the command post and connect the air crews with the ground crews. And so if you have training with communications, you know how to operate all the different communication systems, and you know, and you have a complete background in all that stuff, Civil Air Patrol wants to talk to you, and they want you to man that command post. You do exactly what you did in the military, but now you do it on a volunteer basis. And as busy as you want to be, if you want to do just a little bit, or if you want to do it a lot, if you want to train other people on how to do it, Civil Air Patrol wants you.
Good. Cora is in Taos, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast for Dale Brown. Go ahead, Cora.
Yes, Ian, I have to agree with you about the draft. You know, my dad happened to be a volunteer during World War II on a B-24 bomber, and it made absolutely no difference whether you were drafted or a volunteer. They all pulled together. And I think this also answers your question about why you don't see the progressives violently demonstrating against war, because this does not engage the whole country. If you're not drafted, not everybody has a piece in the pie, and it is the poverty level people that are volunteering because they have no other choice, and they have no voice in the government. And this does not mean that they're unpatriotic or can't do the job. It just means they have no other options. So it's just made too easy to go to war because not everybody's engaged.
Well, I agree with you to a certain extent. If you're looking for the money aspect, and everybody talks about the money aspect, if you're looking for the paycheck, you would automatically turn towards the military because you're guaranteed a paycheck. If you enlist, you're going to get a paycheck. But if you go through basic training, even if you make it through basic training and then you go to the next level, because you have to go to the next level, you have to get trained in some specialty. You go through basic training, and then you go through the next level, some sort of specialty that you choose. If you make it through that, that's a different level than just doing a paycheck.
I'll just be honest with you. I just don't think that holds water. I think there's a lot of people who look at that and go, I got to get through basic in order to be able to keep this gig. And so they want to, for the college benefits, for the educational opportunities that they'll get, for the career training they'll get. And
the military is different, especially nowadays. I would say 10 years ago, that was different. A lot of people volunteered for the International Guard and the Air Force Reserve because they would get a lot of educational benefits and they get a lot of stuff. But nowadays, the chances if you just sign up for the National Guard or for the Reserves, back 10 years ago, the chances are you weren't going to go anywhere except for your local area. I mean, nowadays, the chances are 75% that you're going to get deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan. So you had to make it through basic training, through advanced training, and then the chances are 75% you're going to get deployed. And
I think a lot of people are doing that because that's the opportunity that they have, and they're taking advantage of that. I can't blame them. I think that's a good thing that they're doing.
It's a little bit different than just the money because
but I never said it was just about the money. I never said it's just about the money, but I just said I think that this is the difference about having a draft. But let me get to John so we can get him in here before the top of the hour for Dale Brown, A Time for Patriots. John?
Yes, sir. I think you folks are kind of ignorant in one subject, and I need to explain it to you. We in Alaska, we have our own Alaska Self-Defense Force.
Yes.
And Brigadier General Holt is our commander.
Absolutely.
And we are totally 100% civilians. But we are issued uniforms. We have antique military equipment, what have you. And it is our job to step in and take the place of the National Guard when the National Guard is called up.
What did we say that you're responding to?
Well, let's say, for example, the Alaska National Guard gets deployed to Iraq.
Yeah, I get that. But whatever. What did we say that you say we're ignorant of? I thought Dale was very clear that there's no civil.
Do not realize that there is, in fact, states that do have a militia, okay, that is purely a militia.
Many states that have that.
Yeah, many states have militias, right?
Yes.
We train in guerrilla warfare. We have our own radio networks and what have you set up.
I think we're all good with that, John. In fact, I think you'll really enjoy Dale Brown's A Time for Patriots. I'm not sure what it is that quite what you're addressing, but I know that if anybody knows stuff like that, it's going to be Dale Brown. And as he said, in the lower 48, the Civil Air Patrol is very much at work, and they are central to the story of A Time for Patriots. And it was a time for lively discussion tonight, Dale, and thank you so much and for the gracious way you handled all of the callers as well. I think one way or another, everybody's going to enjoy your book and the conversations that it will no doubt start. So congratulations on all of your success and look forward to whatever that next novel is that's coming along.
Great. Thanks very much, Ian. I appreciate being on the show.
Very good. And Memorial Day weekend is special. It's not just some time off. Take a minute or two. Wouldn't kill you to bend a knee a little bit for those people who have given their lives in service of this country. Deus te amat, and I do too.